Welcome to Fourth Stream Radio, where we consider concepts to help on your quest to a satisfied mind. And today, Dave and I are talking about some of the unique challenges of the generations who currently inhabit the Earth.
Yeah, before we get started, did I tell you that you're really cute?
That's really nice of you, because I look pretty awful today.
I don't think so at
all. Hopefully we won't run into anybody.
You know, there are challenges that are facing those of us who are living as generations in on the Earth in 2017. And we're all creatures of culture into which we were born, you know, whether it's Abraham or you were Muhammad or Aristotle or Lincoln, you take your pick. Our decade, our century, our ethnicity, our politics and pop culture, our families, our experiences, they all serve to forge the heart and soul of our being. So try as we might, these cultural realities color our view of God and man. It's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree that cultural realities color our view. An example of what we mean by this is to hear things. For me, it's helpful to hear about other cultures. I heard a missionary talking about his time in Africa recently, and he was explaining that their word for sing meant with their voice and their feet. So singing to them meant singing and dancing, whereas to us it means only using our voice. Another area, when they asked what their word was for being spiritual, they paused and they really had to think about it. And they finally said, well, it's life. Spiritual is life. They didn't separate, like, this is my life, and then over here is, my spiritual life. Yeah, so it's just interesting. I think, too, the Great Depression really had an effect on people's perception of money and security moving into kind of our own culture. And now we have so much more that our perception of security has changed again. Our present culture's perception of enough has changed. And so those are just examples from one culture to another, but just in our own culture, how things sort of proceed, either upward or downward, depending on what we usher in.
Well, you know, there's nothing new under the sun,
mm-hmm.
and the scriptures make that clear. And, you know, pretty much, if you're honest about human history, that's true. But
well, you don't feel that way when you're young, because you're discovering. But as you get, a little bit older, you go, oh, I heard my parents talk about this.
Yeah, so, really God and the God story has to be rediscovered in every generation. It has to come about again. And while we may appreciate and respect the stories of our parents or our grandparents' spiritual journeys, it really doesn't mean a lot of a personal nature until our own feet hit the path of personal faith.
Yeah. In our culture, I think that intelligence and information are a big deal.
Yes.
And that's where our feet hit the ground in our culture. That's a big deal. So it has an effect on our view of God. We try hard to understand doctrine and all the details we can uncover, but it doesn't mean we're uncovering the power of God. So each thing that we go through in our culture, God wants us to find him and to look for him and what is going on.
Yeah, I want to spend a little bit of time in Acts 17. I refer to it now and then, but I want to develop a little bit. And I use the Message translation. By and large, I teach out of the New American Standard. Because I like the construction of the words and whatever. You read the New International Version. But the Message has been kind of fun for us.
I use the Message here on the air because I just think it has pictures. It has a little different vibrancy for today's culture.
Well, this is setting the stage in Acts 17 related to our conversation about generational Achilles today, because every generation has their vulnerabilities,
mm-hmm.
So
and something that they have to fight ushering into the next generation.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is out of Acts 17, out of the Message. Downtown Athens was a great place for gossip. There were always people hanging around, natives and tourists alike, waiting for the latest tidbit on almost anything. So Paul took his stand in the open space at the Areopagus, and he laid it out for them. It's plain to see that you Athenians take your religion seriously. When I arrived here today, or the other day, I was fascinated with all the shrines I came across. And then I found one inscribed to the God nobody knows.
Yeah.
And of course, that for Paul the Apostle, that was just, he just had to grab a hold of that. He just couldn't let it go. But that whole idea that, every generation, we have a tendency to, translate what we think happened in history. But, they were present in their history, just like they were here on the Areopagus, anywhere else in history.
Yeah, and he knew that he didn't know the God that he thought he was searching for when he was persecuting people. And so he could, that's how he found a way to connect with them, in that they didn't know what exactly what they were searching for.
So the inscription to the God nobody knows, here's his response. I'm here to introduce you to this God so you can worship intelligently. Know who you're dealing with. The God who made the world and everything in it, this master of sky and land, doesn't live in custom-made shrines or need the human race to run errands for him. I love that.
Yeah.
As if he couldn't take care of himself. He makes the creatures don't make him. And I love how Paul is able to relate in the context that he's in, but he's also grabbing a hold of the truth about the majesty of who God is and the big plan of who God is, and he's explaining it to these Athenians. Pretty cool. So he goes on and he says, he makes the creatures don't make him. Starting from scratch, he made the entire human race and made the earth hospitable. Starting from scratch. With plenty of time and space for living, so we could seek after God and not just grope around in the dark, but actually find him. And he doesn't play hide and seek with us. He's not remote, but he's near. We live and move in him, and we can't get away from him. One of your poets said it well, we're the God created. Well, if we're the God created, it doesn't make a lot of sense to think that we could hire a sculptor to chisel out a God of stone for us, does it? So in very plain words, he's explaining to that generation, that group of people that didn't have the same background that he did, but he found that connection of the God who can't be known. And I like how that's translated, because I feel like that's more what it is in our culture. There are so many people who think that God can't be known, and that's the opposite of what the God story teaches us.
Yeah, that's a part of what I take away from this whole thing, is that he took time to understand the culture before he started talking. You know, he compliments them on their search, but he even took the time to consider a strategy on what to say, like he even quoted one of their poets. So I just think that's cool. That's one thing I take away, is what do I need to know about not just my culture where I live right now, but when I go visit someone or family or your family. Every culture is a little bit different.
I'm going to I'm going to make two statements right now, and they're kind of harsh in a little bit, but they're
okay. I'll soften them.
They're directed at my generation, so, so I'm going to begin with that, and then the generation that is after us. My generation bequeaths yours the fruits of selfish individualism. We have embraced materialism, self-actualization, personal convenience, and secularism. This has robbed our generation of huge parts of our collective soul. We pass to you relativism, isolation, and defiant independence from authority, which results in disconnection. How's that make you feel?
Well, actually, I've had time to think about it, obviously, but I guess I want to talk about a little bit about how we got there. I think about my great-grandparents and grandparents. I had a great-grandfather that lost four wives to childbirth and disease. You know, that generation had their own set of things that could make them bitter or that they could walk through. I don't know what they ushered in or maybe kept from being ushering in through all that. I do think after the Depression and World War II, parents wanted something better for their kids. So they offered stability in one way, but maybe some instability in the realities. Those unsettled times brought them. They communicated less. They just pulled themselves up by the bootstraps. So maybe there wasn't always enough communication. I say all these with question marks because they're just observations. I just kind of wonder about them from my own experience. But I know that the generation I'm from, we helped usher in make love, not war. We really began to question authority and fight back against the status quo. We called it the establishment. So I think that led to the next generation seeing more of a breakdown in the nuclear family, and I put quotes around these words too, unwanted pregnancies, and they question authority so deeply, they don't even know they do it.
Yes.
And now yet another generation later, and this isn't an observation, I've actually had people tell me this, they don't respect anyone until they're shown respect. So I'm really not lifting up one generation over another.
No, that's not what...
I just am trying to show how different the cultures can be just within our country and how we have a choice to enter in and help usher that in or keep it from being ushered into our lives and our family legacy.
So I've given that excoriating version of our generation. Now, your generation has inherited the futility of this paradigm shift, and you find yourself at a precarious historical crossroads. Aloof and individualistic, you're free to be cynical about the substance of life and matters of the soul. You're often indecisive, excuse-ridden, reinventive of your own brand of materialism, and have been spoon-fed political correctness, a mere band-aid for the ills of mankind. So, you know, different generations have different characteristics, and I'm not the kind of person that looks at Gen Xers or millennials and just categorizes people.
Correct.
Any more than I would my own generation. But the reality is that we live in our generation. And so in order to figure out what our Achilles is or what our weak points are,
we have to be honest and really look at it.
We really do. And that's kind of what I'd like to end with today. I wrote a few things that I think are the prescription to this, but I know you had a couple more comments. So.
Well, I just wanted to say that a friend of ours who spends way more time thinking about this than I do told us that Americans proudly carry a deep-rooted pioneer spirit. So while that pioneer spirit can really demonstrate great independence and fortitude, it can at the same time carry it with a resistance to working together, being vulnerable enough in relationships to have deep connections.
So the prescription
to
that. Ask God to teach you about kingdom spirituality and move forward without criticism or anger. If I've heard it once, I've heard it 100 times. You know, people are disillusioned with the status quo, and so they just criticize and then withdraw. But, you know, we don't really have that option.
No.
You know, our commitment needs to be reach out for kingdom spirituality. If you don't like religion, that's okay with me. Mm-hmm. But, hey, there's a king.
Don't throw it all away.
Absolutely. Second of all, this was tough for me, but I had to courageously embrace personal responsibility for my own journey. You know, I can't blame anybody else for what either happens or doesn't happen in my life. I take responsibility for it.
Yeah, and you can't, like you said, take responsibility. You can't look back and blame. Sometimes you can go, this is where it came from.
Right.
And I'm going to move it a different way. But it's there has to be forgiveness in there.
And then another piece of advice is to take a stand with your whole life. You referred to it a little bit earlier, and you talked about the whole idea of kind of dichotomizing and how you say, you know, well, a seventh of my life or a fifth of my life or a fourth of my life is spiritual. All of our lives are spiritual. And so we have to take a stand with our entire life.
I'm going to read out of Romans 12:1. This just puts it so clearly. So here's what I want you to do, God helping you. Take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for Him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out, readily recognize what He wants from you, and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you, and He develops well-formed maturity in you.
Take a stand with your whole life. Couple more things just to close this off. Don't forget to faithfully and passionately pray to find others of similar kingdom mind, as well as those who can guide you in the journey. You know, the people we hang out with have a lot to do with the quality lives
they
that we live.
A lot of support.
And above all, my dear friends, remember, God is incredibly gracious, and those of us who realize we have been forgiven much will also love much.
I love that verse.
Well, it's huge. Hey, thanks, Bernadette. Forestream.com is a collection of resources to help you and those you know experience the freedom of a kingdom life. If you'd like to listen to today's program in its entirety, go to forestream.com and click on the radio button. Together, we are
finding hope at forthstream.com.
Hey, will you join me again tomorrow?
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is a guess. It's fun doing it.